Well, hello everyone. I did a Julius Evola guide earlier in the week, and in it I mentioned that I may follow up with a Thomas Carlyle guide. Lots of people wanted that, and I'm feeling very generous, friends, with Christmas coming up. Speaking of which, before I get going here, pick up a course at the academic agency, Trivium, the bestseller. I'll play the ad, and when I come back, we're going to go through all of Thomas Carlyle. There's all his books here. We're going to go through his essential works, nice-to-have stuff which is mainly of literary interest, stuff of special academic interest only. I'll go through all of it. But first of all, let's have a look at this ad, and I'll see you on the other side.
Agency.
All right, so Thomas Carlyle is quite a strange and difficult writer to get into, chiefly because his works, he wrote a lot of articles and essays which are scattered across lots of different things. The standard edition of Carlyle is a 30-volume Works of Thomas Carlyle. Obviously, that's unwieldy. A lot of the essays that he's known for are in a collection called Miscellaneous Essays and Articles, and another set are called Latter-day Pamphlets. But here he really wrote a few books. He wrote Past and Present, On Heroes and Hero Worship, this novel, Sartor Resartus, and the big book here, French Revolution, and a couple of others, like his, which I haven't read, his great work on Frederick the Great, Frederick II of Prussia, and he wrote some biography or other as well, The Life of John Sterling, I think. Haven't read that either. Generally speaking, Carlyle's work can be put into three broad categories, and in fact the titles of these collections I have here sum them up pretty well. He has essays on literature, he has historical essays or stuff, he has an interest in history and writing history, a bit of a historian himself, so he, you know, obviously the French Revolution is a work of history, okay, but he has peculiar views on how history should be done, and then of main interest to us, I think, are his political writings, essays on politics and society, okay? Now, people often ask me, these big Carlyle books I've got behind me here, where are they from? Well, the French Revolution one is from the Folio Society. These are the Norman and Charlotte Strauss editions, which are big scholarly editions, okay? Now, they look big, right? Because there's a lot of scholarly apparatus in them. If you have a look, the notes of this book, right, the actual Carlyle content, that is the notes, right? These are all scholarly notes here. That much of the book is notes. And this much of the book is introduction. Okay, so these books could be a lot smaller, but there's a lot of scholarly apparatus in them. And because I am a scholar, friends, I sometimes need that material. Having published on Carlyle, such as in my book, The Prophets of Doom, there's Carlyle there, there's a chapter on him there. I also wrote the Remembering the Right article for Chronicles magazine on Carlyle. Maybe I'll write on Carlyle again. He's a writer of great interest to me. But for most people, you don't need all that scholarly apparatus. I mean, they look cool on the shelf, right? But these are pretty expensive volumes, okay? So what I'm trying to do is I'm going to give a practical, you know, I realize a lot of people don't have unlimited budget, especially not if you've just bought the Trivium. So we're going to have a look at essential stuff, and I'm assuming people are interested first and foremost for political reasons. Then there are things that are nice to have. Then there are things I would call of literary interest and of special academic interest only. Now, his history and literature stuff does feed in to the politics because it's all the same stuff in, you know, in different realms, if that makes any sense. But let us start with the essentials, okay? Now, in the case of Carlyle, even though he's quite difficult, you know, both to read and because the stuff is scattered across all sorts of different things, you know, it's often quite hard to know where to start. But Animus Classics put out this book. Now, it's not a break. It doesn't have any scholarly apparatus. Doesn't have. It's a very bare bones edition. Okay. But if all you want to do is read Carlyle, they've done most of the work for you by picking out his essential political writings. And we could do worse than go through the contents of this, because they've pretty much got everything that is worth reading. And for, well, it's not everything that's worth reading, but a lot of the essential stuff is in here, okay? Sign of the Times from 1829, which is his first... Yeah, that's his first foray into kind of political commentary, classic essay, Sign of the Times, followed up by Chartism from 1840, which is also a classic, The Condition of England Question, Statistics, Finest Peasantry in All the World. I mean, you get a feel for Carlyle in just the titles alone, you know, this horrible world of sham captains and quacks and, you know, fakes. It's tremendous stuff. It's so rich and alive and moralistic. You know, his views on laissez-faire and how England is like a rudderless ship. You know, nobody is there to right the ship of state. You know, much like today, friends. So, yeah, The Condition of England Question is good. Chartism is good. And I think both Chartism and Past and Present were read by Marx and Engels. And there's a very interesting review of Past and Present by Engels that you can find on Marxist.org that gives you a good flavour of some of the stuff he talks about. But anyway... Chartism is absolutely essential, Carlyle, and a lot of his kind of basic ideas. I mean, this essay on statistics is really good. His mindset, his framing, rights and mights, all of this stuff is essential to grasp. If you were to start anywhere with Carlyle, I would actually start with these two essays, Sign of the Times, but mainly just read Chartism. It's only like 80 pages long. It's like a pamphlet. Chartism, great place to start. Chartism and Past and Present. Chartism is almost like a kind of prelude to Past and Present, which is a very interesting book. It was an actual book, a full-length book. There's a scholarly edition there if you want to fork out for it. Past and Present is a very interesting because he contrasts his own Victorian Britain, which is full of like horrible sheens and things like this, to the 12th century, a 12th century abbot. And obviously he's on the side of the medievals. He would prefer society to look more like the medieval era than his contemporary Britain. But what's interesting about it is the things that he highlights throughout and the kind of non-material aspects of life and the communal aspects and the social bonds that he highlights in his portrait of the 12th century. also some of his coinages in past and present, some of his names, you know, Bobus Higgins, Sausage Maker on the Great Scale, and things like this. He's such a brilliant writer, Carlyle. One of our greatest, you know. I mean, there's obviously Shakespeare there, but honestly, in terms of great British writers, Carlyle's got to be up there. He'd make the top 10 for me, without doubt. He'd make the top 10. Even though he didn't really write a lot of non-fiction, he does have one novel, which we'll get to in a moment, but his you know, his electric rhetorical style is, I mean, it's so good. It's got this kind of sermon-like energy about it. You know, when they call him the prophet, you know, they call him a prophet, the sage of Chelsea, there is something of the, you know, he's thundering down on the page, lightning and thunder on the page. It's just incredible. So, yeah, past and present, also really good. But if you want the, like, the nuts and bolts of his politics, Chartism pretty much has it all. There's also a famous book on heroes and hero worship. Now, I've got this a couple of times. There's the posh scholarly edition there from the Strauss and Howe collection. But I've also got this Yale edition here, also a scholarly edition on heroes and hero worship. And that is really interesting, too. That is notable for his, I guess, what you'd call like proto-perennialism, or his, you know, he's definitely a religious man. There's a lot of huge religious overtones in his work. You know, he's often been called Calvinism without the theology, but he's also not a Christian, or he's not a normal Christian, because he just refuses to believe that God came down and made tables as a carpenter. So he won't dignify, or he refuses to believe in the Jesus story, basically, which is pretty key to being a Christian. But yet he has got this kind of perennialist, or he definitely believes in some notion of a divine universe, something like this. I don't know what you'd call it. And that means, though, that he sees that he's willing to praise in the same volume both Oliver Cromwell, one of his great heroes, and Muhammad. Okay, so one of the heroes in Heroes and Hero Worship is the Prophet Muhammad. So yeah, be prepared for that. He's a kind of interesting, very interesting thinker when it comes to these sorts of things. And of course, Heroes and Hero Worship is where he outlines what has become known as the great man theory of history, so hated by the liberal establishment, but also the importance of heroism, of the great man who's willing to take history by the scruff of the neck. But also, he stresses that the great man can come in many different ways. He can come as a divinity, he can come as a prophet, he can come as a poet, he can come as a priest, he can come as a man of letters, and he can come as a king, of course. And, you know, we think of the king, but according to Carlyle, Shakespeare was a great man of history. Now, Shakespeare didn't lead any armies, he just wrote a few plays, you know. So, speaking of man of letters, I have decided that next time I'm interviewed, right, I recently went on Harrison Pitt's show, The Forge, and they put me up, Nima Parvi, elite theorist. Next time I'm on any show, I want to be introduced as a man of letters. Nima Parvini, a man of letters. That's how I want to be known, okay? A man of letters. inspired by Carlyle's chapter on it, on heroes and hero worship. So, yeah, that is important as well. We have the late... Now, if you read Curtis Yarvin, who was actually responsible for introducing me to Carlyle, you know, whatever our other differences are, we both like Carlyle. There is the occasional discourse, okay, a word that I cannot say on YouTube, on the end question, and then the Latter-day Pamphlet and Shooting Niagara and after. Okay, the late Carlyle. Now, these are noticeable for being extremely reactionary, for being a little bit politically incorrect, we might say. But certainly, I mean, even by the standards of his own time, the occasional discourse was pretty controversial, and he knew it. And there's a kind of very interesting device in that essay where he's giving a lecture and all of these kind of liberal people are kind of, coughing and walking out and, how dare you say that and all that, because he's deliberately riling up the shit libs of his day. Carlyle is, a bit of a shit poster as well, if you want to put it that way. And if you want, I mean, I've got a scholarly edition of Latter-day Pamphlets. This is hard to get hold of. If you get hold of this, hats off to you, because I don't know how many copies there are even in the world. But this one edited by Goldberg and Siegel is probably the definitive version of Latter-day Pamphlet. They haven't got round the Strauss and Howe. I don't know if they're going to bring out a Latter-day Pamphlet. I've noticed it's the same team, or the same scholars were involved. So in a way, this was the prototype. This came out all the way back in 1983 and is not part of this Strauss and Howe series. Ideally, they'll bring it out there. But this is the, if you want all the scholarly paraphernalia, this is the best version. I think it came out with some like Canadian Research Council or something, right? The Canadian Federation of Humanities. But this is the best version of Latter-day Pamphlets if you want a definitive edition. So let's get to the nice to have. And just on Latter-day Pamphlets, Yavin says it's the best place to start. Every single one of these is a classic, okay? The present time, just a lamentation on the absolute state of things in the Britain of his day. Model prisons, one of my absolute favourites. Ox face, dog face, all of that sort of stuff. Where Carlyle is going around these new prisons that they've built, and he's like, they are living in luxury. Bear in mind now, he's going around a Victorian prison, and Carlyle's saying, they are giving these prisoners too much. I've always recommended Carl Benjamin read Model Prisons by Carlyle, because I think he'd be right up his street. Downing Street, a new Downing Street, Stump Orator, a classic, Parliaments. I mean, the contempt that Carlyle has for the ruling class of his time is just legendary, just brilliant. And it's ironic because they liked him. Benjamin Disraeli actually offered him a knighthood, or they offered him some great award, and he turned it down. He was like, I don't want to... He turned it down because he didn't like Benjamin Disraeli's sort. And in fact, in a rare moment of contrition, later on, he kind of regretted his behaviour, etc. But he had staunch views on various different people and things like that. This essay, Shooting Niagara and After, among other things, in these works, he predicts that Haiti will just be a basket case for the next 200 years. And he predicts all sorts of other things, like there'll one day be a black president. He's writing like 250 years before Barack Obama, and he predicts Barack Obama. And because he's following the logic of liberalism, he's following the logic of democracy, and he predicts a great many things. But he also predicts that Haiti will never achieve anything. Haiti will just be, violent and, unproductive and so on for the rest of time. And history has vindicated Carlyle. And this is why they call him a prophet, because a lot of the things he said had a habit of coming true. A lot of the things he talked about are things that we still have problems with today. Rampant cash nexus replacing social bonds. Nomadism, which I've talked about recently. Ben Shapiro's view, where you can't afford to live in the town that you grew up. You don't deserve to live there, Well, all right, you to say, Ben. Nomadism is another great concept of Carlyle's. Anyway, let's get into... So those are the essentials. What are the nice-to-haves? What are the nice-to-haves? Well, one of the areas of interest, especially to me someone interested in historiography, are Carlyle's views on history. Now, obviously, quite nice to have, or quite nice to read, is The French Revolution. Probably his most famous book, right, or most widely read book. He's got that folio edition there. Now, The French Revolution is interesting for a number of reasons. One reason it's interesting is because of Carlyle's view that the old French aristocracy deserved to be purged with hot fire, and they had it coming. They had gone the elite had become degenerate. The aristocracy were no good. They had succumbed to laissez-faire and interest and debt and selfishness and debauchery, and therefore Cromwell had to come. Okay, or well, in this case, not Cromwell, but the revolutionaries. But then Carlyle is aware of the human cost and the suffering and the violence and the chaos that came with the French Revolution. So it's not like he was... I mean, he basically, his view is that the aristocracy deserved to be purged. Something new had to come. But also that, you know, this kind of chaos, this revolutionary spirit and so on, in itself is no good. You know, you're unleashing a kind of demonic force in a way. And, you know, in Carlyle's view, Napoleon had to come. Interestingly, on Heroes and Hero Worship, he has an appraisal of Bonaparte, of Napoleon, and does not, he says, well, he's half a great man. He's not fully, like, he lacks the divine spirit, according to Carlyle, to, you know, the doctrine of French liberalism that he was spreading around was too materialistic at its core for Carlyle's taste. So Napoleon ends up being half a great man, not a full great man. He's not kind of commenting on his lack of height. He's told Carlyle was a tall man, by the way. But yeah, so he has mixed views on Napoleon. And the French Revolution was revolutionary because he used a technique of ignoring like mainstream history and going to magazines and newspaper articles and contemporary accounts and anecdotes. And so what he's trying to do, in a way, is do like a book version of a fly-on-the-wall documentary. Okay, so reading The French Revolution, it's like you're there at the Bastille. You know, what was the woman with her baby crying there like? What did it smell like? So he really tries to bring it alive. And one of the interesting things, speaking of nice to have, okay, nice to have, is in his lifetime, Carlyle brought out an edition of Oliver Cromwell's Letters and Speeches, okay, which is in the standard Works of Carlyle, Volume 6, and then 6, 7, and 8, something like that. And the only one you really need is Volume 1, unless you're into Cromwell and want to read all his speeches. But the Carlyle interest here is the introduction that he writes, the introduction to the Carlyle, to the Cromwell, where he has a chapter called Anti-Dryer's Dust, and then he kind of has a defense of Cromwell and so on and so forth. This introduction here is very interesting because it explains why he thought Cromwell was necessary, why he tries to rehabilitate Cromwell, and again, of interest now, because England needs a Cromwell again, I would argue, right? Somebody needs to come. We're all looking for that person, whether it's Rupert Lowe or not, who knows. But it's also interesting for this anti-dryer's dust, because it explains Carlyle's thinking as to how he thought that history should live and breathe, and not just be this antiquarian kind of exercise in collecting facts and dates and figures and so on. He wants to bring history alive, bring you to the battlefield, smell the smells. So that's a nice to have. Not essential, but it's a nice to have. Also really nice to have, again, good luck finding this. Maybe there's, is this Carlyle Encyclopedia put together by a chap called Cumming? This is one of my most prized books. Of all the books I've got, this has been one of the most useful in writing on Carlyle. You know, mine was withdrawn from some library somewhere, right? So that library's loss is my gain. And what this does, it's just an A to Z of everything you could ever know about Carlisle, right? But you, like, anything you care about, anything like his views on London, his views on God, his views on John Knox, his, you know, what he had to say about this person or that person or, you know, whatever, it's all in here. It's some of his sayings, what he meant by, you know, the everlasting yay and all of this sort of stuff, all in here. Brilliant book. One of my, it's not by Carlisle, but there's a lot of Carlisle in there. The Carlisle Encyclopedia, absolutely brilliant edition. One of the best books I own, to be honest. What else? Yeah, I would say some of his historical essays. In fact, some of the essays on, some of the essays left out of the essential political writings, right? The essential political writings are in here. The essays on politics and society. Now, you will be able to find these in other places, like the miscellaneous essays and things like that. But there are some key essays, I would argue, that they could have included in here. It's a thick enough book already, but if you were to have like three or four others, okay, worth checking out, there is. Hold on. This essay here, Characteristics. Characteristics. Second essay down. See that? Characteristics. Characteristics, definitely, I would say, is worth having a look at. Because he argues that the problem with Britain, the problem with the England of his time, is that people had lost their characteristics. They'd become too self-aware, too self-conscious, too self-doubting, too lacking in heroic will and vigour. And in the end, they don't stand for anything. They don't have any, they don't have any animating spirit, which is what Carlisle was always looking for, heroic will and animating spirit. And he was looking around him and saying, all of these people are too self-conscious, they're too self-doubting. And in many ways, that has remained the case in Britain. That has remained the case today. You look around you and you're looking for Cromwell and there's nobody there. Even more now than it was in his day. Even more now than it was back then. And Characteristics really does sum that up. Another one in here, probably worth pulling out. Let's have a look. Dr. Francia or Dr. Francia. That's one of Yarvin's favourites. About the dictator, I guess you'd call. That's one of his more hardcore essays where you'll see just how far he's prepared to go. Because above all else, he wants order, he wants law, and so on. And, you know, where a firm hand is required, Carlisle was prepared to go there. So that's an interesting one. I think those two are nice to have, looking at these. Some of his historical essays, of interest. Let's have a look. This is historical essays of interest. The first two here on history and history again, worth seeking out if you want more along the lines of what he was talking about in the Cromwell introduction. I would say his Early Kings of Norway, I remember quite enjoying. If you want to know about like Eric Bloodaxe and things like that, that's kind of quite interesting, you know, in and of itself. And of course, with Carlisle, he always appreciates, like, he loves the blood and guts of it. He loves the kind of brutality of it, and it all comes out. So that's good as well. Some of his stuff on, if you're into like German idealism, Goethe, Schiller, stuff like that, his essays on literature, maybe worth checking out. A lot of his thinking is kind of German romanticism, German idealism. So, yeah, I mean, his essays on literature in general, some of them are kind of quite interesting. Like, for example, let me just remind myself what's in here now. Let's have a look. I mean, his one on Sir Walter Scott, I seem to remember, where he says, like, look, Walter Scott, he's got some decent ideas, but the trouble is that Walter Scott becomes a commercial slop merchant. He becomes commercial. He ultimately becomes a sellout. And so I kind of enjoy his attacks on Walter Scott. So that's one that kind of stuck with me. What else have we got here? Of literary interest, of course, there's his weird novel, Sartor Resartus. I can't, it's kind of stuck behind here. I can't get it out. That is weird. That's a very strange book about a guy who... it's often studied on English undergraduate courses and of interest to literary scholars. If people study Carlisle at university, they're probably going to study that if they're going to come across him at all. It's very odd because it's all about this guy who's got like this tailor shop and he's got this idea of making clothes. It's hard to explain. But what it shows is that as a kind of literary figure, Carlisle has a lot of odd, I guess you'd say, like postmodern ideas. Like he's always playing with frames and framing devices and distancing techniques where, you know, there's an older narrator commenting on a younger self and, you know, epistolary kind of devices in there. It's often studied side by side with Tristram Shandy, right? So if you're into that, if you're into literature, definitely a very interesting novel. Very weird, very unusual, especially by the standards of Carlyle's own time. You know, even if it was brought out now, it'd be strange. As a Victorian novel, very, very unusual. You know, and kind of light years away from your Jane Austens and your Bronte sisters and so on. Carlisle was on a different planet to those sorts of people. Great influence, of course, on Charles Dickens, but Carlisle's influence on Dickens was less in his literary style and more in his kind of social and political thinking. A lot of the stuff in Dickens, the kind of Dickensian Britain we think of, is really Carlisle. It's really Carlisleian Britain. That's something to bear in mind as well. And then special academic interest only, pretty much everything else, you'd say. I mean, some of the Carlisle I haven't read, like his Frederick the Great book, and his apparently Adolf Hitler went to bed with a copy of that Frederick II book under his pillow every night. So apparently he was a fan of Carlyle's, specifically that book. So obviously that's had some influence on some people in history. I haven't read it though. I also haven't read his life of John Sterling. I haven't even got those books. But I would say that a lot of the other stuff, all the essays I didn't highlight and so on, are really of special academic interest only, of which there could be quite a number of people who are academically interested in Carlisle. You know, there's a lot of like strange incidental things, like for example, like there's this essay about a necklace I remember reading, some necklace heist that happened. So he often commented on stuff that was happening, right, stuff that was just happening in the world. But some of them have got great turns of phrases, you know. A lot of the phrases people use come from Carlisle that they don't even know about. Like calling economics the dismal science is a Carlisle, is from Carlisle. So anyway, hopefully I did the great man justice. This is the only Thomas Carlisle guide you'll ever need, hopefully. Let me know what you make of it all in the comments. Pick up a course at the Academic Agency and I'll catch you next time. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.